Hello everyone, and welcome to another Windows Phone 7 session here on Channel 9. With me today, Jorge Rostrum. Jorge, please introduce yourself.
So my name is Jorge Rostrum, and I'm a program manager in the application platform team, responsible for push notifications and amongst other features.
Among other features. And my name is Yohar Kiryadi. I'm a technical evangelist working with Windows Phone 7. And Jorge, it's great to have you back. It's the second video we're doing for push.
Thank you.
And why don't you take us through exactly what we're going to have on this video?
So I would like to get through first the API changes that we made for the push notifications API. So we have reached a new level or a whole level of maturity in the API right now, where we have set the naming conventions to a more appropriate ones. And I want to walk you through that and the reasons why we made this. Secondary, I want to talk about the setup of how you set up your desktop, and for future references, what it would require on the actual phones. I will also walk through some best practices requirements around how to send notifications from the back end, and the considerations that are important to think about based on feedback that we've got back. And then I would like to discuss a little bit around connectivity options. And finally, I would like to discuss some optional APIs that we have, which are not really related to push notifications, but they overlap in a bit, and how you can use those ones to mitigate certain scenarios.
Cool. So if you guys are completely new to push notification, we early highly suggest that you actually go and review the previous video,
okay,
and then come back and to see this video, because we're going to assume that you already know what push is. So Jorge, what's new with API in this beta release of the tools?
Okay, so let me show you the code, instead, because it's easier to talk around the code, and
I guess.
And I'll show you. So first, all these code samples that I'm going to show you are available in the MSDN documentation for the beta, which you can find at developer.windowsphone.com. So I'm just taking all of that and walk you through that and see. So first, we have removed. One of the event handlers that we have, which is the shell entry point notification, which was called. So that one was the tile notification. Tile is the entity of the application, or the shortcut to the application, which exists on the phone's start menu.
Start screen.
I can show you that here. So this would be the tile for
IE.
For IE, for example. So we removed that one because the application can't really do anything with the tile update notification anyway, and the tile update is more for the application service in the back end to show a certain state of the application service in the back end, and that's it.
So just to make sure we are 100% clear, we have not removed the functionality of the tile update.
Exactly.
The only thing we removed from the API is the ability for the developer to receive any updates upon tile change
when the application is running in the foreground.
Right.
Exactly. That's correct. Otherwise, the rest of the delegates SSM, we have renamed. So if you can see here, we have the HTTP notification received here. This is the normal one, the raw notification that you receive when your application is running. We have something called shell toast notification received, which used to be the shell notification delegate, I think it was called in the CTPs. So shell toast is more about the correct naming, and the toast is the one that pops down from the screen on the top.
So the toast is a little bar
exactly.
Pops up on the screen.
Exactly. The reason why we're still delivering this one to the application, that it actually makes sense for the application to do anything with it, because we won't pop up the toast when the application is running in the foreground, which is something that still sticks from the CTP.
And that's the only time where the shell toast actually doesn't appear, right?
Exactly.
So, and under any sort of other conditions, you will get
exactly in front of any in front of any other application, it will just show up as usual. And then we have the error occurred in delegate. So this one was called something different in the old release, but it was called an exception in the return exception classes. We realized that it wasn't really practical to return exception classes on a delegate, so we cleaned up a little bit around that and did an enumeration instead of the errors. The error occurred events are the asynchronous errors which can be delivered to the application when the application is running actively. So it can show you certain connectivity information, it can show you certain power level. So I have an enumeration here that I can go down to. So we have the channel open fail, which can happen in instances where, God forbid, that happens, that our backend service is not up and running, or if your connectivity is disabled, so you don't have any network connectivity on your phone, or your PC has disabled network connectivity, and so forth. So these are fatal connectivity errors that can be detected from the service.
Basically, when you try to open or create a new channel.
Yeah. Otherwise, in a normal scenario, when it takes a longer time, you won't get this callback back. It's just going to retry in the background until it finds the connectivity in the background. The message bad content is when you have invalid content that are pushing through your tile and toast notifications, because the tile and toast notifications, as you know, according to the previous CDP release, you have to format that one in a specific XML format. So if your some of the contents there are required to be in a certain way, and if you don't follow that one, we will tell you that it's a bad content. At that point in time, we won't rip down the channel as we do for the bad payload format error. So for the bad payload format error, we will actually rip down the your whole endpoint end-to-end, or your channel.
So what's the difference between bad message content and bad payload?
So payload is actually the contents of the XML compared to the payload format, one which is the actual syntax of the XML. So we assume that you know the syntax of the of our push notifications protocol. So notifications rate is too high. That means that your service is pushing down too many messages, and we start applying throttling policies in the platform and in the backend.
So that's basically saying to the application running on the phone, if you have means to tell your backend service to stop pushing messages, that would be a good time to do it.
Exactly,
right,
this
now
would be a good time to do it. And also, if you never expect this to happen, it would be that's a good point to tell your user that you are being pushed by some other entity, probably, almost likely.
Something
bad is really happening here. And then you have the power level change. You can find further details about the state machine of the power levels and the actual different power levels that we have. But we enforce certain policies on different power levels. So that means that the behavior will be different. You, for example, won't be able to receive tiles when your phone is in a certain power state. So I would recommend to take a look at that state machine and see how it fits into your development state.
So basically, if we have low power, we are saying that we are not going to send any more messages to the phone?
So what we're doing there is that we are telling the backend to not send down anything down to the phone. Through the backend, you can get that information of what the current state is of that endpoint. So, for example, if you're pushing down a tile update, the backend service will tell you that that this message type is currently being suppressed. So you're going to know that the phone is not receiving these messages. The only thing that we're doing is that we're telling our backend, hey, we are down at a very critical level, and if we don't put the phone into the charger right now, then we don't want to exhaust the battery through push notifications.
Good.
So it's more of a platform working in a more user-friendly way, rather than having to have all applications or all services to know how to develop applications in a battery-friendly way. So we're making decisions because we know what's going on.
We want to make sure that the phone lasts as long as possible.
Exactly, and you get a consistent behavior. So in this case, you cannot have one application that didn't care about the battery performance of the device, and to break all the other applications which would be performing correctly. Okay, so that's it. Let me see my so let's go down to the binding as well.
Scrolling down. So we've made some changes to the binding.
The binding API is a little bit different. So we are no longer relying on the exception handling for telling you that you are already bound to a tile and toast notification. So instead of that, we have new properties. Yeah, it made it a little bit complicated to write all this exception code. So now we have two properties: one which is called is bound to shell tile, and one is bound to shell toast. By if-elsing around this one, you're always going to know whether you need to bind or not to bind when you're getting in and out of your application. It's also good to use these APIs for the opt-in requirements that we have during an ingestion process where we require applications to have a setting and by default being turned off. So this is something that we enforce strictly on our ingestion pipeline to make the user experience more consistent over applications. So the user knows which applications has opted in into push notifications rather than having automatic opting in when you launch the application.
Yes.
So this API will simplify that step as well. Then in the binding, we have changed some of the APIs as well. So before we were allowing you to bind to the live tile functionality where we are allowing you to put an HTTP reference inside the payload to a backend image to tile. So instead of creating a live tile or a shell tile object, now we are allowing you to put in a URI. It's not really a domain URI. It's more of a policy, which might be a domain, or it might be a domain with subfolders below it as well, where you basically can do when you create a channel down on the phone, you tell it that you want to bind it against this list of URIs.
And it's a list of URIs.
A list of URIs. Yeah. So we allow you to do have many or have one. This means that your application is whitelisting these domains or these subdomains to allow you to push down a direct URI to that specific image.
And that's interesting because you can now do a lot of stuff with it because you can have a base URI with some parameters and you can...
Exactly. Yeah, so you could have an ASPX page, for example, that actually generates the image. So you could have contoso.com-myimages and then user question mark and then parameter into the...
To the specific user.
Yeah, to the specific user, and then you could generate the image on the fly.
And it can be different images every time based on whatever.
Exactly.
You can add more parameters if you want to.
Exactly.
So you can have a generic URI,
which
then during runtime or during the application, you can generate multiple stuff for it.
Yeah,
and
that's
the tile will change.
Exactly. That's how we do our testing, for example. In our testing, we have certain way to we have URIs which we create, and then we tell our backend to generate different images so we can test different size of images, different delays, and so forth.
Right. Cool. So that's a nice change.
Exactly. And we have also called out the limitations around this feature functionality in the latest documentation. So the limitation is as following. An image, which is a JPEG or a PNG, cannot exceed 80 kilobytes.
So in size.
In size.
That's okay.
And it cannot take more than 1 minute to download. So if any of those two conditions are exceeded, we are default going to cancel that notification down to the phone, and we are going to change the tile to the default applications image, which means that the user will see that something went wrong, but your application by itself won't be able to go and query that information.
Are we going to enforce, or are we going to do any retries or anything like that?
No, we're not going to do retries, because once a push has failed, we assume that that push was invalid, and then the backend can do whatever retries. That's for the live tiles.
And we have no way to... So the next time I'm going to push a tile from my backend, do I get any information that something like that happened?
No, you're not going to get any information about that, but we assume that you know the size of the images that you're generating.
Yeah,
so if you exceed that one, we are going to assume that that's being done with an intention of having a larger image.
Yep.
And if you're taking longer than 1 minute, you're going to see it in the back end as well, because your download time is going to take longer than one minute. So it's fairly simple to do error detection around that.
Makes sense.
Okay, so that's it. The other thing that we've done as well in the more related to the backend code is that we are serializing all the service headers now. So when you push a notification from the backend, I don't have the samples here, but you can find those samples in the MSD, and we spent quite a lot of time around that documentation, so you can find all of that there. Then we're going to serialize whatever headers, and this makes the most sense when you're pushing raw notifications down to your application,
right?
Because in this case, you can put the whatever headers, JSON, AJAX. We still have, though, the limitation of the size of the push notifications now. So the end-to-end size limitation is that it's 1K. And 1K, that includes the headers. So the recommendation from us is that you shouldn't exceed 500 bytes in your your raw notification. That's still a lot of bytes to to put whatever stateful information that you want to put it. And I want to emphasize once again, the push notifications feature is not a data delivery mechanism. It's a way to show the happy application with certain amount of stateful information to your
And it's a best effort service anyhow.
Yeah, it's a best effort. So we don't have any guarantees. But we will deliver the notification according to the batching interval that you set in the back end if the connectivity
allows
connectivity.
And just so everybody know, we can do JSON now.
That's kind of awesome. So now you can send your objects down to your phone. As much as you can fit in 500 bytes.
Exactly. Just so we have some size limitation. Yeah. Cool. So these are basically the major changes to the API, servicing headers, exception.
Yeah, and the exception handling as well.
Which is very important.
Yeah, so we have all our custom exceptions that we had in the CTPs has been removed. So now we have standard exceptions. Right now in the current MSDN documentation, we don't have the exceptions that are being thrown out to the different APIs. That was because we wanted to nail down all this information. Most likely, we will, very in the close future, I'm going to try to get this information out to blogs. So keep your eyes open on the forums and the blogs and see to it that the information ends up there. So, because it's going to make it simpler for developers out there to...
And we have a couple of samples that we are releasing shortly, which are very detailed.
And where you guys are taking care of the exception handler.
So. Cool. So, Jorge, we've covered the new APIs or the changes in the API in the beta and some of the new stuff that we have made changes into the error exception in tile and so forth. But there is a whole thing that we need to cover, and we know that people ask questions about it. It's all the everything that happened on the back-end side, right? How do you communicate with the Microsoft Push Notification Service, best practices, stuff like that. So take us through it.
Yeah, so one of the questions that I'm getting really frequently is about when does notifications get delivered to my phone and what are the different limiting factors, like what is my guaranteed time and so forth. So just as a baseline, the push notification service is the best effort service. We will try to deliver notifications as soon as possible to the phone if the network connectivity is working. And if your batching interval has been configured, that it should be delivered according to whatever timeout that you want.
And there's no retries.
Exactly.
There's no store and forward.
Exactly. And nothing at all about that. So
if something happens, like you cannot send because of bad network or whatever, then basically we drop that push notification message.
So, well, in the sense, there is no retries in the sense end-to-end. But what we do is that we will try to send the notification for as long as the TTL submitted. If we have critical changes in the network or critical errors in the network between the phone and the backend, yes, then there might be so that we are dropping messages. But it's the TTL really that defines how long we're going to... how many times we're going to try to deliver the... Because it's not a really retry in the normal fashion. And this is also a true push mechanism. So it means that we push down to the phone. It's not that the phone is pulling back to the back end and keeping track of it. That's also another thing. So I keep on mentioning batching intervals back and forth. So I just want to show the numbers, actually, because I think that that's going to help a lot. So for all the three different notification classes that we have, raw, toast, and tiles, you can set the three different batching intervals. The first one is that you deliver to the service immediately. That's the first one. And that's you set that one on the message class setting on the notification. The second one is that we will deliver it no later than 450 seconds from the time that the notification was pushed from the back end. That means that we might send it earlier than 450 seconds if we have a connectivity to the phone and we are flushing down anything to the phone. But if there is nothing that has to be flushed down to the phone, we're going to hold on to it until 450 seconds. And the third one is 900 seconds. and it's the same rules that apply. This allows certain notification types, which you don't necessarily need to deliver directly to the phone, to be batched up in the backend. Note though that you have to match your TTLs correctly on those notifications to your batching interval, because the last thing that you want is to send notifications on a high batching interval and get them being disposed by the backend because their TTL expired.
Right. So basically, what you're saying is that when the backend service, so it's not the application on the phone, it's the backend service
wants to
push messages to the phone.
Exactly.
So when you push every message, you basically can configure the batching interval and says when you want to send what.
Exactly. When you want that to be flushed down to the phone.
Right. So, you know, here is a naive question. I'm a developer. Mm. Why don't send everything immediately? I mean, why?
Well,
what reason should I have to do something differently than immediate?
It's mostly the user experience, because what is the point of sending immediate notifications on certain items that might not be required to be delivered immediately? So, for example, if you get a specific request that requires an action, that, of course, would be something that you would like to return immediately. Or send immediately down to the phone. But if we were, for example, that someone posted something on your wall in a certain social communicator scenarios, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to deliver that down to the phone directly.
Do we have a way to send something and say, okay, I'll send it in up to 10 minutes? Because it's up to 10 minutes, right? Up to 900 milliseconds.
Up to 900 seconds.
it's more than 10 minutes.
Okay.
So we set up to 900 seconds.
Yeah.
And let's say around, and so that message can be delivered anywhere within this window,
yeah.
Right? There is another push that is coming. Can I cancel the first one? He was not pushed yet, and then
You cannot cancel the first one, and that's where the TTL comes in. Like, you have to define your TTLs in a way that it makes sense for your service. Like, it depends on your load, depends on your scenarios in the backend, because we didn't have a good way to define a simple API in the back end without starting to look into specific protocols for specific scenarios. So instead of getting down, we support social communicator scenarios very well, or we support mailing scenarios very well. What we said is we would make a generic entry point. You decide your TTLs, you decide your delivery timeouts, but in the back end, we keep it simple.
Okay.
So it's a simple API.
So what's the relation exactly between the TTL, and maybe you should explain what TTL means?
It's time to live. So TTL on a specific package is how long we're going to keep it in the MPN services, Microsoft Push Notification Services. And that's disregarding of what the batching interval you set. So, for example, if you have a time to live of less than 900 seconds and you have shorter TTL, this notification will be expired before the expiry time of your flushing.
There is an option for it to happen.
Exactly. So that can happen. And then sometimes it might make sense and sometimes it might not make sense. So it's really up to you to define your scenarios and decide how you want to send these notifications.
So there is a way basically for you to, there may be a pattern, I don't know how valid it is, but to set a lower TTL on a high, on a long batching interval, and if you have something new to send, then you're able to just trickle it all the time.
And also we're looking into extending this on the back end as well. So from the services perspective, we have something called message ID, which today is an optional header. That one allows you to identify a specific push that was pushed into services. We're looking into the future how we can extend that one for backend service to query information about a current notification, because in certain scenarios it might make sense to know something about your push notification. But at the same time, we don't want to overload our push notification service with lots of application logic in the backend.
Right. So I guess the next question is people are asking is when to send what?
Yeah. So
which type of push notification?
Yeah.
To send?
So to get back to the baseline as well, tile notifications are notifications which are informational, which shows the user that something has changed in your backend, and it might make sense for you to launch your application, but it's not necessarily something that you have to do right now. The typical scenario there is like mailing-like scenarios where you have mails that are counting up. Toast notifications are attention required. Those are really personal. it really gets in your face as a user.
Exactly.
It's intrusive. It shakes. It shows on top of the lock screen and so forth. So those ones are really in the category of breaking changes, take action now and do something.
Breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news, for example. So you have that's a typical example of that one. And the third one, raw notification cannot be used in applications. So that those falls into them. So we have done all the power management schemas around which notifications are being delivered to the phone or not. So when you push notifications from your backend service to the backend, do not be afraid to push notifications because of power consideration, because we know when to deliver these notifications. For example, if you haven't bound to a tile or a toast, we will take the notification and we will tell you a respond back that this channel is suppressed, and which means that we will never deliver that notification down to the phone, we just drop it. In the same thing with raw notifications, like, you don't have to know your application states for pushing raw notifications. The return back will tell you that raw is not currently delivering because it's suppressed, which means that
applications are trying.
Yeah, exactly. Which means that you can make that assumption, which gives you a little bit of information around how to
write.
How you can write some application logic in the back end based on that information.
So we don't have API on the back end asking specifically per device ID or per URI, which is identifying a phone, the application on the phone. We don't have a way to ask if the tile is pinned to the start menu or if the application is running. But when we send a tile notification, you can actually get...
Yeah, you can get the information whether... You can assume that it's...
If it's suppressed.
If it's suppressed, it's either unpinned or the phone has not bound the tile notification to the channel.
Right, and if you're sending raw and it's suppressed, so the application is not running right now.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So those are the assumptions you can make. So for the payload, so in the current documentation, we have two options right now for sending payload. This has to do with how we serialize the headers. So we're calling out in documentation right now that in the future release we will have the real header serialization as handled as a real HTTP notification. So this is due to our release scheduling and when we released our CTP or our beta tools compared to our services deployment and timeline. But we are looking into having a service deployment update the 30th of July, when we're going to roll out the latest and greatest changes. At that point of time, you can refer to the documentation when it says that what is called as for the future release.
Right. And that's on the back end side.
That's on the back end.
How you serialize your message.
Yeah, that's on the back end.
For pushing them.
Exactly. So there won't be any downtime on the services, but if you are not paying attention to that rollout, at that point of time, you're going to start getting failed notifications and your channel is going to start working on your client, and your client, if your application is running, you're going to get the error occurred, invalid payload exception.
Which makes me think that I need to update all my labs.
Exactly.
For that one.
Exactly. The reason why we couldn't call it out in the documentation is because we didn't lock down the date at that point in time, but now we have the date locked down. So we're talking about a few weeks of...
11 days from now.
Yeah, 11 days from now, and we're counting down. So.
Cool. So this will give us all the new payload, but as well all the new information about the tile suppressed and the
raw exactly. It's going to give you the suppressed.
So you get more information on return.
And I would recommend in MSDN as well, go under the section how to send a push notification, and that one has a massive enumeration. It's not massive, but it's big, and I'm really happy about that we got that in there. It tells you all the different states. It tells you all the different error codes you're going to get back from the services and how you react and respond to them and what you can expect to see from that one.
Sweet. So I think we basically covered how to push messages, right?
Exactly.
So Jorge, most developers don't have phones yet, right?
Yeah.
To work with, so we only have the XDEs. Yeah. And the setup for the tool is rather easy, that you start building stuff.
Yeah.
For push notification, and people are, we see a bunch of questions on the forums and on certain blogs, and in general, people having some I would say, connectivity issues where they fail to open the channel.
Correct.
And basically, we've said, or we have identified, you actually did it, it's related to mostly to network and setup issues.
Yeah,
right?
many late nights. And
so why don't you take us through that process so we can everybody will be make sure that they have the right setup.
Yeah, so hopefully people can benefit from my late night work. So, to start with, XE, or the emulator that runs together with the development tools, is there is some complexity about it, how it runs on your host machine and how it gets networking. Add the complexity of the push notifications feature, which uses which communicates over the TLS or SSL port of 443, and then you have different setups that can make it really complicated and also really hard to locate the errors and failures. So I have a couple of steps that I've been telling people to follow, and those are the ones that I'm going to walk you through. So
just to make sure, before you start with the steps, sorry about cutting you. The main issue is when you try to open a channel.
When you try to
open or create a new one, right? So the call to the API is successful, but basically you just wait.
Exactly. And you wait and you don't see anything and it's all silent. And that's by design, because that's the behavior of our retail logic, where we don't wanna involve the application into the connection management. So I think that's the thing that's been confusing lots of developers and lots of
When we hit that spot, now what? Yeah.
So the first thing that I start by telling people is that check your setup currently on your computer. So do you have any firewalls that are set up to filter out traffic over port 43 to begin with, the Windows firewall? Do you have any company policies if you are running your company PC, and do they have any settings policy that you have? Check that you don't have any weird SOX proxy settings on your Internet Explorer connectivity options. And or if you should have a proxy setting, set it correctly, the SOX proxy, because it's the SOX proxy that we use for the emulator to.
And that's basically inbound.
Yeah, that's
right?
Inbound. It's inbound and outbound, and that's why the push notification traffic sometimes gets stopped by any of the proxies. If you're having any problem in your company domain, talk to your IS department and see to it that they have enabled port 43 traffic for TLS over TCP. See to it that they're not filtering any traffic and doing packet snooping, which would be catching those packets and then throw them away. Also, an easy thing to look is that when you launch the emulator, it shows up at running processes, which is called XE.exe. If you have this nifty little tool called TCP View, which is a sysinternals, a Microsoft tool, that you can run. You can check at process XE.exe, and you can check if it's open up a channel or a port 443 from XDE. And if then everything should be up and working. And if you are behind a proxy network and so forth, check which destination port it's connected to, and you can easily get that information to your IS department or whoever support department to tell them, I'm getting this far, but I'm not getting any further. If you are in a normal network with no proxy, you should see Microsoft Live IP address in the...
In the port.
In the matching port on that.
Right. Line.
So that's the easiest way to do this. Once you get in the future of starting using phones and so forth for cellular data connection, it should just work magically. There shouldn't be any setups whatsoever. But if you get into the Wi-Fi scenarios on the phone as well, then it's going to start getting into the similar. So if you are on a Wi-Fi which connects to a company network, you might not be able to connect through the proxy environment and so forth. Now, in the push notification service, we prefer to connect over the cellular network. So if you have cellular network, we will always use a cellular network.
Regardless if
you have Wi-Fi. And we do not do dynamic failover in the sense that if we see Wi-Fi, we don't fail over into Wi-Fi. So we only use Wi-Fi in case of the...
There's no cellular.
There is no other network connectivity option.
So once you get your phone, it basically probably will be a real phone or something sort of that.
Exactly.
Then you probably want to have your 3G enabled and have a data plan.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most important features.
Cool. So Jorge, we covered basically the changes in the API. We covered, you know, some best practices on the server. We talked to some setup issues and etc. Yeah. In the latest release, which is the beta tools, you got some new APIs to work with the tile, right?
Yes.
And basically, if push notification like toast or raw or tile are something that that are more reactive on part of the phone or the application, right? The backend is doing all the pushing, all the work. On the new API, you made some changes, right? You allow the application itself, when you're writing your code, to build more in controls of what gets shown on the tile, for example, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what exactly are new APIs?
So we have a more simple way to allow you to update the background of your tile without having a dependency to a full-fledged
push service.
So it will be on top of our push service. This will allow the application to, for example, have a scheduled update on the background image. And there is no application code run to do that. We do that automatically for it. So the only thing that we require is an application to set up that in the same pattern that we have for push notifications when you do the binding. Right. So I'm going to show you some.
So basically, you're saying that a developer has a way to update tiles on the start screen for his application without having a push server pushing tiles.
Exactly. So it's a more of a polling pattern, but it's really restricted. And I'm going to walk you through the different steps. So as you see here, you have the code sample here behind you. The first sample is to create a multi-time schedule, which means that in this specific sample, we are saying that we're doing an everyday tile update. We're doing it for 7 times at the maximum, and the recurrence type is an interval type, which says that it's recurring. You can set a one-time schedule, which I'm going to show you in a different. You set the image URI. In this case, I'm setting it to an absolute URI to an image in the backend. It could also be a more complex one where you could send your information, I'm user A, to an ASPX site, and it could generate the image or show the state.
And the URI can be relatively to your own application in your local store as well.
No, it can only be from cloud. It can only be from cloud. So this is only for allowing cloud content to update the information. So this is to follow our restriction around background processing, but still allow you to do
something.
Yeah, certain state information. And this feature is more oriented for applications which fetch the information from the cloud, because we're seeing that most applications are going to the backend and fetching.
Of course.
Exactly, and seeing that. So this API creates a multi-time schedule. I'm going to go down and show you like a one-off schedule, which means that this one will create a one-time schedule. It will say that the start time is now, or you can say the start time is a couple of hours from now, and it would fetch that image at that time. And you see in this one, I add 2 hours just to show you the different.
Cool. And you get a way to start, obviously, the schedule. And over at the bottom, we see that you have a way to stop the
schedule. So you can stop a schedule at any point in time. You cannot query any information about the schedule, what it is right now, or any of that. Well, the only thing you could keep track of that yourself, that you have a schedule available, or that you have started a schedule. But this,
because
this is all handled by the system,
right?
In that way, the schedules are very, very strict. They follow very strict rules, and if you walk anything outside of these rules, we will remove
the schedule.
Yes. Without any considerations of the applications.
And I guess the rules are the same, right? If you're downloading in tiles, so you have the size limitation for 80Ks, and you have the time limitation of downloading the image itself.
Yeah, but in this case, we will just cancel the whole schedule. Now, the application, every time it creates a new schedule and does a start, we will replace the old schedule.
So you can see a pattern here. Every time you start your application, you can hear. You know, stop your schedule, start a new schedule, and you can have tiles changing with regards or with no regards to push notifications being sent.
Exactly. The disadvantage here, though, if you have a misbehaving backend service, and which means that you would fall out our rules or restriction rules, which means that you would be deleted. What's going to happen is that instead of updating the image, we're going to put the default image of your application in the same way that it would fail over a push notification.
Yep.
Which means that if you are downloading images from a bad service, or if you're downloading too big images and so forth, your tile is going to get this pattern of falling back to the default all the time, which most likely it's not going to be a really good user experience, which means that the user won't like your application very much. So pay a lot of consideration on what you're downloading, what you want to update, and what you want to achieve with this feature, because it could be a killer for your application in case you're making the tiles UX
change.
Yeah, change.
Too often.
Exactly. And the current recurrence schedules that we have is the hourly schedule, we have the daily schedule, we have the weekly schedule, and we have the monthly schedule.
Cool. So you can schedule basically every day, have a new tile coming up, every hour.
Exactly. And then we won't do the update during when the phone screen is turned off. So we will wait until the user goes and opens up the screen, and that's when we're going to start doing the refresh. So we're doing all of these optimizations on the platform. This is just for an application to open up a little bit more scenarios, but they don't want to take the whole step off the push notifications.
Yep. It's an enabler, basically.
It's an enabler to allow you to do.
Cool. So, Jorge, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It was really a good run through all the changes in the new beta and the new stuff that we have, and the server side as well, and obviously the setup things.
Yeah, the setup thing has been something that I wanted to get out of my heart and spread it out.
Well, maybe we'll write something about it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Cool. So with that, do you have anything else you want to say before we depart?
Well, start using the features right now and hit the beta tools, because there's some really cool stuff you can do there right now, and the tools are mature, the emulator is mature, and you can write some really cool stuff right now.
And obviously, we've updated our training kit to reflect all the changes. So the Windows Phone 7 training kit for developers includes an updated version of the weather application. It's all nice and shiny with cool graphics.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It includes all the changes that we have. Mm. And obviously, we're going to make another change when we get the new payloads updated in a couple of days. Mm. So with that, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on a Windows Phone 7 video session here on Channel 9. Jorge, thank you again.
Thank you.
And hope to see you soon in more videos. Thank you.